You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Andrea van der Straaten. Andrea, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks you for inviting me. It's really a pleasure. Thank you.
And you're in, where are you located right now? Where are we talking from?
Well, we are talking actually from my apartment now, right now, and not from my studio, because in my studio I don't have a phone like this. And up here, it's also very nice and quiet. It's an old-fashioned kind of atelier that you imagine when you think of European ateliers with these large window front. But I have another studio too, because there's not so much space in terms of wall space, so that I can try out things. So I have more or less two spaces to work in. And this is the more private
and
one.
And the city you're in is the and what is the city?
The city is Vienna in Austria. Vienna. Yeah.
So let's talk about your latest project. What is it that you're working on now that you're either preparing for or can tell us a little bit about?
Yeah. Well, actually, right at the moment, I'm working on three things at the same time, because they are also quite different. One is more practical based, because I have to get things packed for a transport for a little group exhibition in 2 weeks, and the transport takes place on Monday. It's a photographic work that's based on The Family of Man by Edward Steichen, the most successful photographic exhibition ever.
You mean the Family of Man was the most? Because yeah, of course I know that that book and that series, that was the most.
That was the most successful exhibition in terms of photographic exhibition ever. Yeah, but I think there are three projects I'm working on, and I could give you a very brief hint about what they are about, and you could decide with what to start. I don't know.
That sounds good. Let's talk about that. Let's start with the Family of Man project.
It's a work, it's a work that I realized a couple of years ago, and it's based on this Family of Man exhibition by Edward Steichen that has been, it came out in 1955 at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. It has been criticized a lot when it got went on tour in Europe in the late 50s, I guess, especially by Roland Barthes. But I was always interested in this exhibition, especially my interest goes towards the question of the relation between images in terms of pictures and language. Because he says, you know a little bit about the exhibition.
I do.
You know that, yeah. So what I did is that I took the catalog that is still in production after so many decades, and I showed it to people from different fields in society and asked them about their opinion, and asked them to choose one or two images and that they would describe the image to me. And I made notes, and these descriptions, sometimes people have chosen even the same images by accident, but I got, of course, two quite different descriptions of what they saw. And I took these descriptions and I wrote them on photographic paper that has exactly the same size as the original photograph in the exhibition. You know, the exhibition, to see what is it that photography can do and what is it that description and the spoken word or the written word can do. Because the exhibition by Steichen was so much criticized, especially by Roland Barthes, in the 50s when the exhibition came to France. But there was some kind of rethinking of the exhibition later on, because of course it the main goal of the exhibition was to overcome a certain way of let's say dividing people in black and white and poor and rich. So when Steichen came out with this exhibition, it was in the United States in this McCarthy era. And I think there's this point of view that makes a closer look on the exhibition quite relevant again. So I took these handwritten texts on photographic paper and combined them with one installation shot that's from the 50s. So it's more or less a reflection about the value of photography, where you can get a situation in one glance. But to describe something, it takes quite a long time, and it can be very different.
And what did you find from that? I mean, it sounds that it's become, you're showing it to different people and getting responses. Were you surprised by any of the responses, or what did you draw from, is what I'm trying to say, the responses that you get and the words that people said who are seeing, some of which may be seeing this work for the first time themselves since it was produced. And I'm referring to, you know, the original Family of Man images that you're showing to people.
Yeah, actually, I was surprised. I was very much surprised because all the people I've shown the catalog to, they went right into it. They were fascinated by the photographs. Whatsoever critique there has been in these decades before, it's the way also the photographs are put together, of course it can be criticized. One of the main critiques has always been, you know, Steichen put these hundreds of photographs, he organized them in different chapters, and the chapters follows man's life. And it has always been seen a little bit, how do I put this, soapy, you know. It's not a very critical view of Steichen, different contexts. It makes a difference if somebody is a very poor child in, I don't know, South America, or brought up in a wealthy context. And the exhibition seemed to make everything very equal on a more superficial way, in a more superficial way. But I think this critique has to be is relative, I would say. So I also smuggled in a little statement by Roland Barthes, because also he, of course, once in his life or more than once, he described a photograph. And I've chosen a photograph from the exhibition, from the Steichen exhibition, that matches perfectly his description. So yeah, it's a little trick. But I was surprised that people still get a lot out of these images, and they feel drawn to them. And the interesting thing, of course, is how different they see it, and how different they describe things, and how different things can be described. This is always very interesting, because it shows that our view on our surroundings, our context, of on what we see, is always so different, also when we see exactly the same things.
It is fascinating, and a new kind of picture of the family of man. I love that idea and what you gain from that. And let's go on to the next project. What's a second project that you're working on now?
Yeah, another project, and I'm very busy with this now because it also comes with some experiments. It's called Langsame Augen. It means so much as a slow eyes. And the experiments I'm doing with now are I'm dealing with phosphorescent light and the afterglow of writing or images. And it has to do with a rather strange story, but most art historians are maybe quite familiar with it. It's Gustave Courbet's painting, L'Origine du Monde, Der Ursprung der Welt. It's in German. It's the origin of the world. And it's a painting he did in 1866. And he was well aware of the fact that he could not show this painting in public because it was concerned quite too, let's say, too offensive,
pornographic. Sure, I know it well. It's the
you know it.
Of the legs and a vagina are kind of close.
Yeah,
and it's,
exactly.
Yeah, the origin
exactly.
of the world.
Exactly.
Now it seems wonderful, but of course then it was quite shocking.
It was shocking. And because it was so shocking, he was forced to hide it in his studio, and it was hidden for 129 years. It has never been shown in 129 years. And I think the story of these different processes of hiding are so fascinating. And I came up with the idea to do something with this. You know the story a little bit, what happened with the painting.
I don't know the story, what happened with that painting. I know the painting, but I don't know how it emerged in public or the story of it.
It's he sold this painting to a diplomat from Turkey who was living in Paris at that time. It could be that it was not the entire picture, but just that he cut out just part of the picture of a bigger painting that showed the woman who could be identified, which is not possible with the painting we know now. So. This guy, his name I think was Khalil Bey, he bought it for his collection. He was collecting erotic paintings. But after a while, he was forced to sell his collection. And somebody bought, it was a nobleman from Hungary. And he bought this painting and brought it to Budapest into his collection. But as he was a Jewish guy, he was forced to emigrate to Paris a little later. And he brought his collection, he tried to save his collection and also this painting by putting them into a safe at a Budapest bank. And went to Paris. And after the war, his collection, also this painting, L'Origine du Monde, went to the black market in Budapest. He bought it back, but he could not bring it to Paris. So he got his son's wife to smuggle it from Budapest to Paris, where it got sold again after a while. And the funny thing is that the most famous French psychoanalyst, Jacques Lacan, he bought the painting in 1955, and he too was forced to hide it because it still, 1955, was too provocative to show it or to hang it, I don't know, over the sofa. Was no idea. So all these different owners of the picture, they always were forced to hide this painting, mostly behind wooden cases and wooden frames with other images painted on it, but always locked, you know, locked behind some wooden frames. So, and there's another interesting story that a woman artist in 2014 in the museum where the painting is now, it's the Musée d'Orsay in Paris. What she did is she positioned herself in before the painting. She sat on the floor, and she showed the visitors exactly what they could see on the painting behind her. And she got arrested. So what I'm thinking about is this strange story. A painter paints a picture that he is forced to hide and has been hidden for nearly 130 years, the female artist is going to be arrested. So I'm putting up the question, is it much better to be an artwork than an artist, especially a female artist? Because the picture has a quiet life. It hangs on the wall. It's admired. Nobody is going to be rude against it. It's not condemned. It's not arrested. But what's the role of an artist, especially a female artist, in this? Because most, but a lot of female artists don't get exactly that, what the painting or the artwork gets, admiration, it is loved, things like this. So the installation or kind of performative installation that I'm going to come up with, it will be in the beginning of December. It takes place in a black box, some kind of black box. It's a pitch dark space. And for me, this space works a little bit like, I don't know the word in English. In German, we say Geburtskanal. Maybe it's something like birth channel or something. Mm. You know, where we can ask this question, if it is better to be an artwork than an artist. And I was thinking about how this very particular and strange story of this painting. What can I do with this? How can I put this? How can I frame this in an aesthetic way? I think the interesting thing is that sometimes it is enough to see something just for a glimpse. It's just for a very short time, and it has an afterglow. It has a huge impact on your life, or maybe the way you are thinking. So I was coming up with the idea to work with this effect of an afterglow. And this is why I'm making these experiments now with phosphorescent light. In different ways. I'm working with phosphorescent foil and also phosphorescent paint, like acrylic paint, writing things. And I want to see, because the effect of afterglow is quite different depending on the material you use. And you can imagine this, that it will take place that way, that I'm in this dark space with maybe a limited number of visitors at the same time. I'm dressed in black too, so I'm not recognized maybe at all. And in irregular rhythms, I activate a flash, a really strong flash. And the flash produces this effect of afterglow on the written things and the material. So it's some kind of a one-night stand in art, because it takes place just once, just for one evening or one night. And it's a little bit an experiment for me, because it's a new form, and I want to dare something new, and I thought this might be interesting.
And the afterglow is really, it's an optical effect, right? At first I was thinking afterglow is kind of, you know, what could even happen when you close your eyes, but we're talking about an optical effect. After you see the flash, there's a glow that is partly in your mind's eye as well as visual. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's. I guess it's both. And right now, I can't exactly say what will be the stronger afterglow. There will be an afterglow of let's say paper in the room where there's something written on. So this is an afterglow of the object, because the phosphorescent foil stores the light for a certain amount of time, and it fades after a while. But sure, we all know this, when you get photographed with a strong flash, you won't see anything for a couple of seconds at least. So it's a play between these both. But the main focus for me is on this afterglow of what you really can see, not just in your mind when you close your eyes, but you can see it when you open your eyes and you look at these foil. So.
And how does that exactly address the question that you're raising, which is, you know, related to the Courbet painting and that performer, is it better to be the art or artist? How does the afterglow relate to that?
Well, The question arises, the question if it's better to be the artwork than an artist, arises with this strange story and the effect. I mean, how much has to be seen from an artwork to remind in your memory? So,
you know, we're really just asking just that relationship and how that kind of explores or investigates that question. But you're talking about also how much we have to see in order to, you know, perceive or understand, as opposed to, is it better to be the art or the artist, which is a slightly different question that's more intellectual than visual, right? You're making this visual representation of that question, in a sense.
Yeah, I hope what comes out with this visual interpretation in this black box is to create a space that's very concentrated, very quiet, in a certain way contemplative. So I'm an artist, and I'm in this space. So when I'm activating the flesh and showing people something at the same time, it brings these parts of the question together. It's really, I have to admit, it's really difficult to explain. Maybe I can't really explain it right now because I haven't done it yet.
Yes, but you have. And the intention and your exploration are also what's interesting. And I'd never heard, I mean, the story you told of the painting is also quite fascinating. Is it the case that it was cut out from a larger painting? I mean, can you see that on the canvas? It was cut out, or is that just a theory?
Yeah. Well, it's not. I mean, the art historians, especially the Musée d'Orsay, I think they haven't proved. I mean, they proved it, but they say, well, it's not clear right now. But it's something that turned up just during the last years. Somebody found a picture that seems to fit together with this picture we know, and the other picture shows a woman's face, and then they made these usual examinations on the canvas, the paint, all these things, and it seems that in fact it has been a larger painting and that he had cut out. If it's true or not, I don't know. I mean, I can imagine, maybe, I don't know. It's a fascinating story, even if it's a rumor, I don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
A painter, maybe he wanted to sell it. Maybe he wanted to sell something. Maybe he was fascinated by this Turkish guy who had this collection. And this was definitely something that fit in this collection. So why not take the chance and sell this piece? I think it would be a really, really very radical gesture at that time to paint the painting as we know it exactly in this dimension and exactly showing only this and not something a little bit more of the woman. But I'm not an art historian. I can't tell. It was radical, and it's still radical because it's still, when you look at the picture now, it's still provocative, I would say, in a certain way. Also, we are surrounded by pornographic situations everywhere. So we cannot be shocked by a picture like this. But it still has this provocative turn. And when you think about this woman artist who showed her own vagina to the public and got arrested right away. Of course, there's this abstraction in the painting, but still it's not easy to... what came to my mind is too pornographic to say this now.
Yeah, no, it's true. But and also, the, you know, always the phrasing, you know, in English, of course, the origin of the world, you know, that also seems to be critical of what, you know, certain religious thinkers might think, you know, if the origin of the world
sure.
is God or Adam and Eve.
Yeah, right.
Of course, it's much more biological than that.
And
at the time, that's radical. And still, you know, in the United States anyway, that would be radical because it's quite puritanical here. So it's interesting that that's still so powerful.
Yeah, because it's also a very radical gesture to bring it so really down to the facts, down also to the body. But it's in a certain way, it's a little bit pathetic too.
Absolutely.
Not less pathetic than to refer to God, I would
right,
say.
Right, right. So let's talk about your third project that you haven't mentioned.
Yeah, the third project is quite a different one. I'm trying to figure out. I'm working on a series of photographs that document a work of mine, an in situ installation that I've done 2 or 3 years ago for the Casino Luxembourg. It's not a gambling hall, I have to say. Casino is in French. Is a space for the bourgeoisie who is interested in art and music and cultural things. So, and this Casino Luxembourg is since decades now, not a museum space, but an art space, a quite well-known art space. But the interesting thing for me is it was a commissioned work, this in situ installation there. Luxembourg was the founding place of the first post-war supranational organization in Europe before the European Union. It was it's so-called Montan Union. It was a union of European coal and steel community. And from this developed the European Union. And in this first organization, there were France, the Netherlands, together with Belgium and Luxembourg, the Benelux states, Italy and Germany, the coal and steel mining countries of this time. And the Casino Luxembourg, which is now this art space, they have the so-called Grand Salle. It's like a ballroom. It's really, really big. And it was a commission. My work was a part of a personal show there, and it was a commissioned work to do a project especially for this space. And in an instant, I got attracted by four overpainted windows. They were high above, shortly under the ceiling, high on the wall, four glasses. And the director told me that these glasses were supposed to be part of cabins for interpreters for these first meetings of the European Union. So I wanted to make a work that deals with the question, what is at risk now in the European Union? Who has the word? Who is saying what's important and what's not? And so I did some research on these windows, because the tricky part was that the spaces behind these overpainted glasses were vanished, because the building has undergone some restorations and reconstructions, and so it could not be verified if these were really interpreter cabins. And after really months of research and long talks with all kinds of people in Luxembourg, we finally found a plan in Brussels in the archive telling that these, in fact, were meant as interpreter cabins. So I took out these overpainted glasses and I put in acrylic glass with laser cuts, and these laser cutouts said, who is speaking in the European Union? Who talks? Qui parle? Wer spricht? Wer schwätzt? Qui parle? In these four languages of the different union, of the European Union. And from these glasses, you could have a look at the huge space below, and there was a tent. You know, these party tents. We know them mostly as party tents, these for fancy garden parties, huge and white with these also put in windows that resemble a little bit very nice round windows. And these windows of the tent matched perfectly the windows in this space in the museum or in this art space. But the tent looked as if a hurricane went through. It was ripped apart. And there were papers floating on the ground. And the whole thing was set up like a film set. There was a lighting system and a tripod with different filters for these lighting systems. So you would enter the space. You could walk in this, walk around in this installation. You could enter the tent that was so destroyed in a certain way already, but also very, I don't know how to put this. It was not destroyed completely. It was still standing. And then when you looked around, you recognized these interpreter cabins with these questions, qui parle, who is speaking, talking from above, you know, down to the tent. And it has this ambivalent feeling to it that the tent on the one side is, you could say, okay, the party is over. At the same time, the tent is something, it's the very first home for a human being. And it could be the ultimate home after catastrophes. We know all this from the news all the time when they have to put up these tents to give shelter to the people. So when I did this 3 years ago, I think it was quite obvious that there would be a refugee problem that could not be denied anymore. I mean, it was obvious also 3 years ago already, with all these refugees from the war in Syria coming over to Europe at the Italian coast and the Greek coast, but north of the Alps, everybody thought maybe it won't hit us. But now the situation is completely different. Of course, we are in the midst of a really big problem now, and again, there's the question, what's at risk in the European Union? And I took these shots, these photographic shots of the installation back then, because I knew that the installation would be gone after the show was closed. And I showed the photographs to various people that did not see the show, to find out if the photographs can stand on them on their own, if they can be seen only or exclusively as a documentary. But it seems that they work independently. So I would like to work with these photographs now and get them enlarged and exhibited somewhere. I don't know where now, but. It's in the situation as we have now, it's important for me to work with this again.
Yeah, that was very interesting, and I think that also sounds like an important show. And in closing, I want to just ask you, so you're still teaching now, is that correct in Germany?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
And how, so does your work, is it involved in, is the market an issue for you? Is your work sold much, kind of thing? Or is that really not the priority or what you're thinking of? I mean, I suppose it's never the priority, but it's nice for work to sell. So I'm just asking, what is its relationship to the so-called market of art?
Yeah, well, I'm selling, but it's not in this huge market scale because I'm working very independently. I'm selling to private collectors, but also to governmental or public collections. One of the last works I sold was to the Museum of Modern Art in Luxembourg. It's a two-channel video installation that has been sold, but I'm not working with a gallery in this more market-oriented way. So teaching at the university gives me some kind of freedom to choose what I would like to work on. So it's this is the good part, I would say. I mean, there's always a good and a bad part. The good part is that I feel very independent, and it allows me to work with very different issues and to do something like the other project that I described before for this black box, to dare something and not to repeat myself in my work. Of course, there are certain issues that that I'm dealing with constantly. For example, language is very important in my work. So I'm not so much looking on if something has a chance to be sold. So it's not market oriented, but of course it's oriented also towards. I wouldn't say selling, but yeah, sure.
Collecting, it can be collected.
Yeah, to be in collections, to be recognized, sure.
And so lastly, is there someone, for people who are listening to this who may be in Vienna or other places, is what would be the next place where they could see your work or the next show that's opening?
Well, the next two things to see the work is this group show that I mentioned, where the Steichen work is going to, and together with another one. And this will be in 2 weeks in Linz. And it's I got an award last year, and this is a very nice thing. Two of my students, of our students, I don't claim, of our students are in the same show because they also got awarded. So this is a little bit like a family feeling to be in the same show with the students, and we all got these awards. This will be from the 17th of November on for 2 months. And then there's this one night stand in art in the black box. It's on the 3rd of December. Yeah, and maybe there will come up other things.
There'll be links also in this interview to other things that may be coming up. Andrea, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure to learn about your work.
Thank you so much for your patience. I'm afraid I think I talked a lot. It's so sometimes, you know, with conceptual work, it's not so easy. I have the feeling there's so much to explain all the time and to describe. It's maybe it's a little bit more difficult than to explain just an image. So I thank you for your patience and your interest. Mm.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.